been leading the fight for true health care reform. So, Governor, why don't you take it away?
I think that Mary, when she introduced the call, was clear. This bill always has been a pretty big giveaway to the insurance companies, but I think a lot of us were willing, in the spirit of compromise, we understand how Washington works, to let some things go that we didn't think were all that great. And a matter of fact, the Democrats, I'm not going to use the word progressives today, and the reason they're not going to do it is we just got some poll data back, which shows that the Democrats are united. They're united in thinking that if you don't have a public option, you shouldn't pass the bill. Now, that's an extraordinary thing. The poll was done by Research 2000. It's just an amazing thing. So this is not just about the left or the progressives or something like that. This is about the vast majority of Democrats in the country, and it goes to every kind of, from African Americans to Hispanics to young people. I mean, it really is quite extraordinary. The Republicans are another matter. They, of course, really are against the public option and so forth. And I encourage you, I think DFA might have on its website, I don't know if it has it up yet, I just got the results myself, the results of this poll, they really are extraordinary. I hope DFA will put them up if they haven't done that yet. It is really quite stunning. And Research 2000, I might add, does a lot of polling for various newspapers and so forth, so it's not like we have a polling operation like Fox News or something of that sort. So let's just speak about where Democrats are. There are a lot of people in the Democratic Party who want a single payer. That was taken off the table, I think, by mistake early on. And Democrats, I thought, behaved pretty well because they understood that, with a lot of maturity, that there was going to be a compromise and that we had to get to a place where we had health insurance for all Americans. And so the bill came down, and I think a lot of people were willing to put up with things that were maybe not so great in order to get a system that worked to take care of the 50 million people with no health insurance. However, as Wendell, and I'm going to turn this over to Wendell as soon as I get done, because he really is an expert on this, having worked in the insurance industry. But here's some of the things that are in this as of we speak today. There is no public option. There is no option to get into Medicare. So you are forced to pay your money or get fined by your government, and your money goes to an insurance company, many of whom take, on average in the small market, 27% and upwards, off the top to spend on CEOs who make $20 million a year, airplanes, private airplanes, and return on equity. So that's 27% of your dollars that don't go to health care. If we had Medicare, it would be 4% of your dollars that don't go to health care. That's number one problem. Number two problem, there's a lot of talk about pre-existing conditions and older people who can't get into the insurance market because they won't let them. They consider age to essentially be a pre-existing condition. Well, that's great. I am so glad that's in there. On the other hand, the fine print says that you can charge people 300% more for being older. So what good does it do to have guaranteed issue? That is, to guarantee insurance companies have to take you, they can charge you three times as much. Now, we're not going to even talk about poor folks, because they do get some kind of a... say you're making $65,000, $70,000 a year, you can pay $20,000 under this bill for your health insurance. Explain to me how that's health insurance reform. I don't understand it. There's lots more here. There's supposed to be some cost control. There are three pilots in cost control that are terrific. Now, this just gets a little in the weeds, but that's what the legislatures do, is they put stuff in the weeds so ordinary people have a hard time finding them. And so this is a little in the weeds, and I apologize for the technicality of it. But the three pilots that are designed to control costs, which are pretty good, things like a home base or a medical home, various committees to look at costs, they're pilot projects. HHS is going to run them, but they can't be implemented on a wide scale unless the Congress votes to implement it. So the very same people who are holding up the real improvements in this are going to be able to hold up cost control. The biggest granddaddy of cost control is something called IMAC, which is essentially a Medicare Advisory Council, which really does have power to report on costs and what the problems are. They are not allowed to issue a report unless the rate of inflation in Medicare exceeds the rate of general medical inflation. That has never happened in the history of Medicare. So there's a lot of cleverness going on behind the scenes here. The bottom line of the cleverness is very little cost control in this bill. There's no insurance reform in this bill that I can figure out, because what insurance reform there is has gutted on the way through the committees as it gets written. So it's unfortunate. And, you know, people say, well, you can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. There's a point at which you stop compromising and giving away this. In the last week of the legislature, when a big bill like this is coming through, what people focus on, I'm talking about good people that we all think are wonderful, wonderful senators, but the mentality in Washington right now is to get a bill. We've got to get a bill. Who can we give this to get a bill? What do we have to give to that person to get a bill? And as a result, legislation is going to be passed that's going to have a huge effect on the future of American health care, because somebody needed one more vote to get a bill. And our entire course of the action of this country for the next 25 or 50 years, or maybe forever, in health care, that's this crazy scramble, giveaways to the special interest in the last week of this. I think you got to draw the line at this. It'll have to be changed or it shouldn't pass.
Okay, good start. Wendell Potter, I know, is known probably to everybody on the call. He's been a hero in this whole battle, having spoken out about what the insurance companies have been up to all these years, and has gotten a great message out around that. Wendell, why don't you add your perspective on the Senate bill and where things are at?
I sure will. Thank you very much for this opportunity. And I was a part of efforts when I was still inside the industry to determine what should the industry try to get out of reform. And as I've been observing how things have unfolded, I've been checking off every single thing that they wanted. They wanted to have an individual mandate. We've got that, even though the president campaigned against it. The president campaigned for a public option. Now it's being stripped out of the legislation. So we've got the possibility of a bill with an individual mandate, which the industry has insisted on having, and no public option, which it insists on not having. Other things that the industry wanted to have, insisted on having, is three words that may not mean a lot to a lot of people. They sound pretty benign, but benefit design flexibility, which they have in the Senate bill. That means it will enable them to continue to design and market plans that will push more and more of this into the ranks of the underinsured. In the Senate legislation already, as written, people who are in middle income families would have to pay 17% up to 22% of their income if someone gets sick in the family. And that will absolutely push more and more people into the ranks of the underinsured and into bankruptcy. The industry wanted to have the ability to base rates on age. They're getting that. In fact, I think they would be able to charge older folks three times as much as younger people. In Massachusetts, the rate is just 2-to-1. And up there, a lot of the people who are in their 50s are already having a very difficult time finding affordable and adequate insurance. Just think what it would be like if you make them pay 3 to 4 times as much. The industry would like to have 5 times.
Wendell, just want to jump in here for a second. In Vermont, where we did it right 15 years ago, companies can only charge 20% more for their oldest patient than they can do for their youngest patient. That is what real community rating is.
Exactly. The industry has moved so far away from the concept of insurance, from community rating, that what they're asking for now is the ability to continue to shift more and more of the financial cost of coverage from insurance companies and employers to individuals and to families. This legislation would essentially enable these companies to sustain what otherwise would be an unsustainable business model. You can't just keep passing more and more of the responsibility onto the shoulders of individuals and families. This legislation would give them a bailout in that it would not only require everyone to buy coverage, to buy their products, and not have another option, but it would have the bonus of having the government pay them nearly $500 billion over 10 years. This is revenue that they wouldn't otherwise get. So, yeah, they are for reform on their own terms, and this Senate bill actually meets every one of their demands.
Okay, so let me take the moderator's prerogative and ask the first question of both of you. The House lot better in terms of having a public option, and a, you know, I think there's debates over how good the language is on it, but I think what most people feel like is a reasonable public option. Beyond that, talking about some of the details that both of you mentioned that were problems in the Senate bill, is the House bill better on a lot of those details, and kind of talk through the dynamics there?
You want to go first, Wendell? I certainly have some things to say, but you know, you're the expert here.
I'll start and say yes. The House bill is significantly better. Obviously it includes a public option, which is vitally important. The reason the insurance industry does not want to have a public option is because it doesn't want to have any new competitor. The industry has been working over the past several years through consolidations and acquisitions to reduce the number of companies that compete, to the point that we now have seven very large for-profit companies that dominate the market. A public option would provide a level of accountability and competition that the Senate bill simply does not have, and it would also offer people an option of being able to buy coverage through an entity that wouldn't have to send taxpayers' dollars or premium dollars to investors and CEOs. It also, while it would require people to get coverage, it would, again, it would give people an option other than having to be forced to buy insurance from the private market. It also has a greater level of accountability. It also give more, regulate more the ability of the companies to design their products to shift more of the financial burden to consumers. The other thing that I think is important that we need to make sure that we're aware of is that the Senate bill would also enable the insurance companies to essentially get around the not using the pre-existing conditions by being able to charge people significantly more for certain health factors. And those factors include things like high cholesterol and diabetes and high blood pressure.
Let me just say a couple of things. The House bill, in my view, is the compromise. I mean, the best plan possible would have been Medicare for all. But we wanted to give Americans a choice. And there are many people in America who like the private sector, who like their employer-based system. And we didn't think, along with the president, that it was right to take that away from them if they liked it. So there are some weaknesses in the House bill. One of them is there's a 200% rate band. It's not as bad as the Senate, where you can charge three times as much to older people, but you can charge twice as much. And, you know, again, coming from Vermont, where the rate band is 20% more, not 100 or 200 or 300 or 400% more, that's a problem. Excuse me, I said 200%, I meant 100%, excuse me. But that's twice as much. So, you know, that's a problem. There are some goodies for the insurance programs. One of the things that doesn't exist in the House bill, which did exist for a short time, was taken out someplace along the line to satisfy the insurance company senators, was the getting rid of the antitrust position. Insurance has an antitrust provision that they're not subject, they can share information. There was a good reason for that when it was 50 years ago, was so they could share actuarial data, but now they're so big they don't need to do that. And there really is no competition. And literally, in a number of states, there's one insurance company that covers 80 or 90% of the people. The public option or the Medicare expansion was designed to provide an alternative to people who wanted one so they could stop the predatory behavior of the insurance companies. Predatory behavior of insurance companies is effectively entirely unregulated, other than state insurance regulations. And there will be an attack. Senator Landrieu has an amendment that allows home state regulations or insurance commissioners to regulate the insurance, which is then sold, and this is in the bill, then sold across state lines. That makes the Texas insurance commissioner the de facto insurance commissioner in Vermont. If that should happen, and that should pass, all the insurance reforms that we've had for 15 years will be wiped out, and our insurance companies will be wiped out as well. So, you know, we need to put the antitrust provision in, and we have got to make sure that individual states can continue to regulate the insurance markets in their states, and that's under attack too in the Senate.
this is Wendell. I can't stress the importance of that more, because the insurance companies, the large ones, have wanted to be able to sell products across state lines. They would go to the state with the least consumer protections and the least amount of regulation to set up business and be able to sell what, in many cases, I refer to it often as fake insurance, very limited benefit plans, and plans that have such high deductibles that more and more people will indeed be forced into bankruptcy.
Okay. All right. Let me open it up for questions. Let me remind folks, when you do ask a question, to state your name and the blog that you write for when you ask. And we're going to limit the ability to do much in the way of follow-up questions, because we just want to spread out who's able to ask. Whoever wants to jump in first is welcome.
I have a question. This is Paul Hogarth from Beyond Colin. And my question is, how do we respond to the criticism that if this the health care bill fails in the Senate, we're going to have no reform and we'll be even worse off? And that, you know, we've spent an entire year trying to get to this moment, and at this point, the momentum is gone.
First of all, I'm not so sure we're going to be worse off, because right now you basically are forced to pay a whole ton of money to insurance companies that you don't necessarily have to pay today, which is, I think, we can do to improve the bill. If they're not going to have a public option, it looks like they're not, we ought to strip down this bill so it's not so pro-insurance, not so anti-consumer. One of the things to do is get rid of the individual mandate. Let people make their own choices. There's a lot of, if this bill goes down, it will not be another generation before it comes back. This is a different time. One of the suggestions is to strip it down to its bare essentials, then come back and do this right, do it through reconciliation, which should have been done in the first place, and get real options in there for the American people. There's some good stuff in this bill. Let's just be plain about that. There's Medicaid expansions, which are very important, although they probably ought to be paid for by the federal government and not the governors, because they don't have any money right now. There is some money for community health centers. There is money for wellness and prevention. There are the exchanges, which we're going to use as a mechanism. That's how Massachusetts buys insurance. Massachusetts covers 97% of all its people. Ironically, it's a Republican program. Mitt Romney and the Democratic legislature put that together. The bad thing, of course, is there's almost no cost control, and they're now running into huge problems there, and they're going to have to go back and fix that. Some of that fixing is good. They're talking about getting rid of fee-for-service medicine in Massachusetts. But those kinds of reforms are down the line. I think the idea that the legislature, the Congress, is not going to take this up again for 20 years. The public will demand it. What they want is a decent fix, not a fix that's run by the special interest, and that's unfortunately what's coming out of the Senate.
Wendell, do you have any comments on the question?
Well, I think the governor's comment is right on target. I think that the Senate bill should be stripped of the things that are just purely giveaways to the insurance industry. The House bill, like the governor said, is a compromise. It's a far better bill. So if we could get to the point that it would look likely that we would have legislation that would resemble and almost track what the House has, then I would say let's go for it. But the Senate bill is in such a mess that I'm not, I think I would agree. I think the reconciliation route is the way to go.
So let me spin here with another question, and I'll make this quick. If they go to conference committee, and there's no way to get any form of the public option in, but they fix a lot of the other sort of less high profile but important details that you two were talking about in your opening, do you think if they could get most of those fixed or all of those fixed, do you think it would still be worth passing, or would you still say let's not pass it?
I know you wanted to take that one, or you what's that?
Yeah, I would certainly want to. I'd like to see what it is that is fixed. I would certainly reserve judgment until I saw exactly what the bill would look like. I think it is possible. I think that there are some things we might be able to do down the road in terms of coming back. I do think that, and I think this is consistent with what the governor said earlier, it is important to try to begin health care reform. We can come back, I think, in subsequent years, if we go through the reconciliation process of getting legislation that takes care of some of the most egregious problems difference in making some of these practices unlawful that should have been made illegal a long time ago, and providing greater accountability and forcing more transparency from the insurance industry. I think that'd be worth doing, but I'd want to see exactly what the legislation would look like.
I'm with Wendell on this stuff. I do think health reform is going to take some time, and the president himself has said we'll go back to this year after year after year. The problem with this bill in the Senate is it sets us in the wrong direction. It sets the whole country in the wrong direction for very short-term, like week-long consideration. How can we get this vote? How can we get that vote? If you're trying to put together a piece of legislation to cater to people who represent the insurance industry because you think that that's the last vote, you've got the wrong process. I actually think it'd be easier next year, because next year, to be honest with you, for better or for worse, we won't have 60 votes in the Senate. There won't be anybody who thinks we can get 60 votes and make a mess of this bill. We'll go through reconciliation. Let me just say one other thing. One of the problems is the Democrats aren't tough enough. You know, if we'd been the Republicans trying to get this thing through, it would have been done and signed in August, because they would have used reconciliation just like George Bush did. It's been used 23 times. And it's true that you can't put the whole thing in. You can't do insurance reform in reconciliation. You don't need it. The reason you don't need it is you can do a Medicare expansion in reconciliation. And Medicare has community rating, it has guaranteed issue, it doesn't charge anybody more than anything else. Anybody else, if you get sick, it's completely portable. That's what the insurance companies are terrified of. We're not trying to snuff out the insurance companies here, although probably some people would like to. I don't feel like that at all. If people like them, I think they ought to be able to use insurance companies. But what we are trying to do is keep the insurance companies honest. Certainly the Senate bill doesn't do that, but you could do that. I'm with Wendell. I think if you can get a bill that sets the building blocks, put in the exchanges, have reform, add money to Medicare and so forth and so on, that makes sense. Let me just say one other thing about this. If you came back after the election in 2011 and introduced a bill, as we almost had a week and a half ago in the Senate, you could get people insured before 2014. So by waiting 2 years and then using Medicare as a substrate, you get people insured. The reason the Senate almost went for Medicare is because they knew that the Democrats are going to do all right in 2010. They got to have a significant number of people who have insurance. They don't have that now. They have a few, but not many. With using Medicare, they could have gotten people in, a significant number of Americans who don't have access to insurance, insured within 3 or 4 months of the president signing the bill, well in time for the election, so these ideas of the death panel and you can't choose your own doctor would have the lie put to them simply by people's experience. That didn't happen, but it could happen. So right now you're going to get insured in 2014 for the most part if you have no insurance under the president. But if you use Medicare and start it a year from now or 2 years from now, you'd still be insured long before you'd get insurance under the present bill.
Okay. All right, and let me open it up for another question. Who out there wants to ask something?
This is Joan from Daily Post. One of the things that hasn't come up, particularly in talking about House Bill, is STUPAC and how we would deal with that if that remained in the bill. Can you give any thoughts on that?
Do that one quickly. I think the bill's dead if STUPAC's in it. I do not think the women of the House are going to put up with that. I think they were taken by surprise. I think that the leadership needed to get the bill over to the Senate. I'd be shocked if STUPAC were in the final bill, even if it's not a reform bill. Even in the Senate bill, I don't think they'll do that, because I just do not believe that the majority of Democrats are going to vote for a bill that doesn't do anything and one that restricts women's rights to make up their own mind about reproductive rights.
I agree. In fact, I've been in Omaha this past couple of days, and I've been baffled at what Senator Nelson has been doing on that topic. I've talked to a lot of people who were ardent supporters of his and who've worked in his campaigns before, and they've known that he's been pro-life, but they don't understand why he's making this such an issue. It has become a wedge issue, and unfortunately, these senators and members of Congress are becoming unwitting pawns of people who are trying to kill the bill.
I have a question. I was on a blogger call. This is Susie Madrak from Crooks and Liars. I was on the call with David Axelrod and the White House health reform director the other night, and one of the things that she talked about was that she said that there was language in the bill to standardize insurance regulation across states and to standardize their authorities. Which sounded like a hell of a good idea to me, because I, you know, I know how crooked a lot of the Wendell, I'm from Philadelphia, so you know, I understand how this works. So I'm wondering. I mean, that she made that sound like that was kind of a definite thing.
It isn't the deal. If you standardize it and you allow states to get tougher, it's fine. But if you standardize it today, you're going to hurt our people up here because we've been living under real insurance reform for 15 years. So if you suddenly allow everybody's insurance companies to charge twice as much, you're really screwing Vermonters who only pay 20%.
Well, this was on the regulation side. This was on, you know, the things like the, you know, the rescission practices and the pre-existing conditions. Like she was saying, for example, that in West Virginia, the state insurance commissioner did not even have the authority to look at a company's books to know whether they were solvent.
All right, let's just suppose you standardize it. What do you think George Bush would do to federal insurance regulation? I'm serious. You've got to think about this stuff. I talked to some people the other day who were all outraged about the filibuster system because of the way it's being used, and they all wanted to get rid of the filibuster. Yes, suppose the Democrats are in the minority and Republicans are trying to ram some right-wing thing through. So you've got to think about what it's going to be like. That's the problem with this bill, is nobody's thinking about what's going to happen 15 years from now.
Yeah.
That is very, very true, and you have to be careful. A lot of states have very good, very strong consumer protections, pretty good regulations. Others do not. What will that standardization look like? Who will be doing the regulating? Who will actually be writing the regulations? That's not actually that I know of completely determined yet. And a lot of devil in the details as you look into this more closely.
And that kind of thing sounds great when you're up there talking about it, and that's exactly what the Senate bill is. They say, well, 30 million people are going to be insured. Oh, yeah? Well, let's look under the hood and see the fine print. Once you see the fine print, these bills are not quite as attractive as you think they are.
Right.
In fact, I'll go one step further and say that we need to be careful, and the Democrats especially need to be careful, that what we're putting in, enacting here, that we won't have the unintended consequences, at least not intended by the Democratic leadership. We could find ourselves in a position of forcing people to buy, and we will be, products from for-profit or at least private insurance companies, and for the most part, that's often for-profit insurance companies. We'll be forced to do that. We'll be forced to have government subsidies go in there. The companies, these insurance companies, will have the ability to market these products that keep people underinsured. I think there's a great potential for people to really be awfully upset when these provisions take effect. They're going to have to be forced to do something that they don't want to do, buy products that they don't want to buy, and know that taxpayers' dollars are subsidizing them, often for inadequate coverage.
Okay, next question.
This is John Odom, just a few miles down the road from you all. I was wondering, you know, Governor, you characterized this as, you know, being a lot about we just got to get a bill, got to get any bill. Looking at the rhetoric of the last few days, how much of this at this point do you think is driven by pure pique and, you know, who's got a grudge against who, what the egos are, who really runs this party? How much of it is that kind of mentality driving some of this?
You know, I think that's one of the reasons that I am determined to stay out of the personality stuff. I don't actually criticize Senator Lieberman, not because I disagree with him, because it doesn't get us anywhere. The Washington press is dying for us to get into a fight with somebody, and that doesn't help. If we focus on the issue at hand, it's what I love about Wendell. He just talked about the issue. We're not interested in personalities. Sure, you'd like to take off the gloves and be entertaining for everybody, but it doesn't get us to a better health care bill, and that's what we're really trying to do. This is a critical issue for Americans. And in the Senate, things have gone off the tracks. In the House, it was a pretty reasonable bill. But it is really off the tracks at this point, heading us in the wrong direction for the long term. And I think we got to focus on that and not give in to the usual human, including my own, instincts to get into a big fight over this or that. Then it really does become about personalities. And if it becomes about personalities, that's how you get a lousy bill.
I would certainly agree with that. I would never speculate on someone's motives or suggest that someone is doing something for a particular reason, because I just don't know. What I do know from spending a lot of time in Washington over the past several months on both sides of the Capitol is that there is a very low level of real understanding of how the commercial insurance industry operates. So I think part of the reason you're seeing things happening as they are is because lawmakers are so susceptible to being influenced by what the health insurance lobbyists say. They're very slick. I mean, I used to be a part of all that. I know how persuasive they can be. They provide selective information, and there is no balance to the kind of stuff that they're feeding to these
Our
members of Congress.
Our database has been updated.
Sorry.
I think Wendell is very right about that. This is Mike Lux again. I do think that this is a lot less about personality than it is about lobbyists being very successful at driving an agenda. So I think that's a big part of the dynamic here. Somebody else have a question? We've got time for maybe one or two more if anybody else has something they want to ask.
It's Susie Madrick again. I'm just curious. Are you saying that basically that if we can get a public option in, no matter how mild it is, it's still worth putting up with all this other stuff?
It's a public option technically in the Senate bill, but it's a non-profit. And of course, it's never been tried, and we'd have to start it from scratch. Nobody knows how it would work. I don't think that kind of public option is really a public option. It's kind of like the co-ops. Now, we know what happens when you do that. They end up being taken over as Blue Cross Blue Shield was by the private sector. So, I any kind of public option is kind of like any bill. If you do that, you're liable to get something that's not going to be helpful in the long run. So I would say the answer to that question is no. It's got to be well thought out. And it's, again, why I think Harry Reid and so many of the others thought that the Medicare option was a good one. It wasn't as comprehensive as the public option in the Senate bill and the House bill, but it was a real solid program that everybody understood that you weren't going to have to explain, and most importantly, you wouldn't have to set up a separate, untried, and untested bureaucracy because everybody knew it worked and it processes a billion claims a year and has done so for 45 years. So I think it does make a difference what kind of public option you have. Technically, one of the senators pointed out to me that this bill does have a public option. That is true, but it's essentially a non-public option because there's no track record whatsoever, and the track record that it does have in terms of survival is very bad.
That's exactly right. The big companies have gotten bigger and bigger. They've forced a lot of nonprofits and smaller competitors out of business where they've bought them. A weak public option or a co-op or a nonprofit just simply will not have the ability to ramp up to compete against these big guys. You need to have a public option with some strength. Otherwise, it's not going to be of any value. Okay. Does anybody else have any more questions?
This is Joan again, since nobody else seems to have one. If we strip back to bare bones, what are the key things that you think are salvageable from the Senate bill that we should actually be looking at to try to be productive in this?
Why don't you go first, Wendell, because your list will be much more comprehensive than mine, I think.
Well, I think we need to have certainly make some of these practices unlawful. The use of rescissions, the use of pre-existing conditions. We need to make sure that there is some accountability that's in this bill. We need to have a lot more information about how these companies operate so that there can be an awareness that we don't have now of really what we're buying. We need to make sure that these companies cannot shift; they cannot shift an inordinate amount of the burden of healthcare onto our shoulders. So I think those are some of the key ones for me. We need to make sure that they are not able to continue to keep us in the ranks of the uninsured and the underinsured.
Okay. Let's wrap up here. I appreciate everybody being on the call. I appreciate Governor Dean and Wendell Potter joining us and providing us with so much good information. I'll just say on my own behalf, having been working on this for a year, I don't think there are easy answers in terms of how to move forward on this. I think that progressives need to be much tougher. tougher negotiators than they've been. I think we need to really push hard, not only on the public option, but on a lot of these small details. I'm always writing in my posts about how important the small details are, and I think Governor Dean and Wendell Potter have done a great job of laying that out. And I think you know, we need to work like crazy to get a strong, solid bill. I think there's lots of options moving forward in terms of the legislative process, in terms of how to do that. And I don't think anybody here wants reform to die. But what we don't want is a bill that's not reformed. So anyway, with that, unless Governor or Wendell, do you have any final comments you want to make?
Well, I don't know if this is appropriate or not. I've actually got a list of some quick improvements that could be made.
All right. Yeah, go ahead.
Go real fast. One, real community rating, not three times extra charges, maybe 20%, maybe nothing like Medicare. Restore the restrictions on pilots and the restrictions on cost control so you can actually use them, and get rid of congressional approval there. Ensure people by 2012, if you're going to use this system, not 2014. Have the feds pay more of a share of the Medicaid expansion so the governors don't resist it. And I'd bring, at least, if you're not going to have real reform, put a little element of real reform in there if you're comfortable with this. Expanding Medicaid, you ought to ensure everybody under 26 under 300% of poverty through Medicaid, like we did in our country, in our state, up to 18%, 18 years old. That'll give essentially universal health care up to, for everybody up to 26. Right now, they have a provision in there which you can stay in your parents' insurance until you're 27, but that assumes your parents have insurance, and that doesn't go to the families that are least likely to have insurance. Make sure that if you're going to have any kind of federal regulation or buying insurance across state lines, that the tougher regulation of the home state is what controls what people buy, and take out the mandate. If you're going to have insurance that you're going to be forced to buy, I don't think it's fair to make people at 27% tax so those CEOs can fly around in their private jets and get $20 million salary. We had enough of that with AIG, and I don't think the Senate ought to do that to us on health care.
Governor, thank you for that list. I agree with every one of them on there.
A whole lot more of them, too. I mean, the problem is, as Wendell said, this is the fine print. And that's why it's so hard to get across the American people what the problem is. You know, folks can go ahead and say, well, everybody's going to have insurance by 2014. And then, you know, you can't leave 31 million people behind. When you start to look at the fine print, you realize that's not what the bill does.
All right. One final thing that I really think is very important, that if it can be a part of the legislation, I strongly endorse it, and that is to require insurance companies to spend a certain percentage of what they take in premiums on medical claims, on real medical care. That has been dropping over the past several years as we've seen more and more of these companies shifting to for-profit status. There are amendments to require them to spend 85% to 90% of premium dollars on medical care. That's really important. If we don't have that, we're going to continue to see these companies being able to shift more and more of the cost to us and shift more and more of our premium dollars to investors.
Well, Mike, I don't want to confuse everybody on here, but just let me tell you what happened to that. Jay Rockefeller got that in, and there were some folks on the call yesterday who claimed that that was going to be in there. Well, it's not going to be in there. It might be in the manager's amendment, but it'll be kicked out, and here's why. The CBO has ruled that if you do that, and it's above 90% or above, and maybe even less than that because they didn't have a ruling to make on that, that is enough government control and expenditures that the entire health budget of the United States is $2.5 trillion has to now be part of the budget. No, you can't do that. I mean, you can't suddenly add $2.5 trillion to the budget, all the insurance company's revenues. So while that was offered, and that's another thing people are running around saying, oh, look at this, that will not be in the final bill. If they couldn't do it in the House, the CBO ruled against it there, they're going to rule against it in the Senate. And, you know, you can put that in the bill and say it's in the bill. Fine print. No, so doesn't happen. So I agree with you. It should happen. But as long as the CBO is going to make that ruling, it isn't going to happen. And only the states will be able to do things like that, you know, and right now that's not happening.
This is for Wendell. Wendell, can you actually make it a condition of any kind of mandate or coverage that the money can only go to companies that have a minimum medical loss ratio?
probably not not with that legislation that would in
No, that's what I'm talking about. If they got that in the final bill, is that?
Oh, that's a good question. You know,
except the
That might be way around the CBO ruling. That's a good idea.
That is a good idea. I'd have to look at that. That's probably not a bad idea.
So from what I understand, John Aravosis, are you on the line?
Mike, let me answer that question. You cannot do that. I looked that up before I did the White.
Okay.
Actually, I am on the line, but I missed the question. What were you? I was ready for a question.
Can you mandate since you can't? Since Senator Rockefeller's thing went down by CBO ruling, can you mandate that people can't? That insurance companies can't sign up for the exchange unless their medical loss ratio is 90% or more? And the answer is no. You can't do that. What you can do, though, is Senator Kerry's amendment, which, if that were tacked on, which the insurance companies will vigorously resist, it gives the state exchange managers the power and the duty to look at the highest medical loss ratios before they put them in the exchange. So you can't specify a number, but you might be able to get away with saying, comparatively, you can only take the ones that have the best ratios for consumers. But you can't specify it's going to be 10% or they're going to end up on the budget.
Here's one thing that might be helpful. I'm not sure whether this could be part of the legislation or not, but at least require the companies to disclose this kind of information. It's hard to get this from some companies. Some companies disclose it, but we need to have some standard definitions of what is included in administrative cost and to require companies to report that so that we as consumers can make our own choices about where we want to sign up for our health insurance.
Okay. So let me go back. John, someone emailed me that they thought you might have a question.
Nope. I appreciate that, but no, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
I joined the call late. So I joined the call late. I forgot about it, so I didn't want to ask a question that might have been repetitive. So.
All right, cool.
Thank you, Doc.
All right, well, with that, we should probably wrap up. We promised we wouldn't keep the Governor and Wendell on the call too long. I appreciate very much everybody's coming in and appreciate the great questions, and I think we're all going to keep working to try to, try to make this bill a hell of a lot better than it currently is.
Really quick, the governor, you had mentioned the poll results. Charlie says that they are now up on the DFA website. It's democracyforamerica.com/poll-results. If you guys want to check those out.
Fascinating stuff.
All right. Thanks to everybody.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.